Good morning and welcome to The Bridge, Coast Community Radio's own weekly news magazine. I'm Kate Brister. In the first part of the show, we'll hear from John Ryan in Unalaska, Alaska. Shell Oil pulled out of Chukchi Sea last week to return to Washington State. We'll learn some of the reasons Shell Oil made the decision. Washington voters will get their ballots this week. It's an off-year election, but one that could mean a shift in control of the House. But first, we'll return to Umpqua Community College and the city of Roseburg. Oregon Governor greeted students returning to Umpqua Community College Monday. It was the first day of classes since October 1st campus shooting that left 10 people dead. From Ashland, Liam Moriarty reports.
Hundreds of Roseburg residents lined the road to the college, waving American flags and signs offering encouragement and support. Governor Brown and college president Rita Cavan spoke with students as they headed to class. Standing before a fountain on campus, Brown noted the community was rallying to help.
This is a very strong and resilient community, and they will provide the support that these students need to move forward and begin the healing process.
Grief counselors are offering services to students and staff. President Cavan says some students told her they were staying away from campus until the media presence diminishes. I'm Liam Moriarty in Roseburg, Oregon.
Over the weekend, memorials were held for four of the nine people killed. Rachel McDonald was there and spoke to us from Roseburg.
Kim Saltmarsh Dietz was remembered Sunday at Pyrenees Vineyard in Myrtle Creek on Highway 99 south of Roseburg. Law enforcement checked each car at the driveway to make sure the service was attended by family, friends, and supporters, not media. In a message on social media, the Vineyard said Dietz had been a caretaker there for many years, along with her husband, who's now manager. Witnesses say Dietz heard a sound in class at Umpqua and was shot when she went to see what was going on. Dietz, who was 59, has been described as a mama bear who was inspired to go back to school by her daughter, who is also a student at UCC. Memorials were held Saturday for the three youngest who died in the UCC shootings. Lucas Eibel was 18. Flags flapped in the breeze outside the church during the service. Eibel was a quadruplet. He and his three siblings were known as the Quad in high school. An animal lover, Eibel volunteered at Wildlife Safari in nearby Winston. Also remembered Saturday, 18-year-old Rebecca Carnes. Her memorial was at Umpqua High School in Myrtle Creek. She was a lover of the outdoors and planned to pursue a career in nursing. She was related to Oregon U.S. Senator Jeff Merkley. Friends and family gathered Saturday at Roseburg Christian Fellowship to remember Quinn Cooper, who was 18. A family friend, Katrina Garut, read a letter from Cooper's mother, Janet, at the memorial.
There are not enough words in the world to completely describe Quinn and his gentle soul. We are still trying to grasp how this happened. How can Quinn, whose light shone so brightly, be gone?
Quinn Cooper was into mixed martial arts. Larry McGraw spoke with reporters before the service on behalf of Cooper's mother and brother. McGraw said Cooper was kind and gentle.
He was a computer geek, and we loved him being that way. He loved big band music, and he loved to dance, and he had a crazy, quirky kind of humor and stuff, and loved his mom and his brother a ton. When I was 18, I didn't necessarily want to do things out in public with my mom, but he did.
McGraw said family has had great support from the community, including Douglas County Sheriff John Hanlon. Trevin Anspaugh was also killed in the shooting at UCC. The 20-year-old loved fishing. Sunday at Cooper Creek Reservoir, two high school student councils held a fundraiser for the Anspaugh family. It was a fishing derby. They called it Trout for Trevin. Anspaugh was the son of a Roseburg firefighter. He'd been a basketball star in high school. A victim who survived the shooting says Anspaugh deliberately fell on her as he was dying in that classroom. Lacey Scroggins says this saved her from being shot. Here's Scroggins' dad, Randy, speaking to NPR.
The blood of that boy, Trevin, saved my daughter's life. I know it, as well as I know that I'm sitting here. He will always be the Scroggins hero from this point forward.
Anspaugh wanted to be a firefighter like his dad. A memorial for Trevin Anspaugh is planned for Saturday at Sutherland High School. I'm Rachel McDonald in Myrtle Creek, Oregon.
Most voters in Washington should have their November ballots in hand by the end of this week. It's an off-election year, but there's one hot legislative race that has implications for future control of the Washington State House. Olympia correspondent Austin Jenkins explains.
This is a special election in Washington's 30th legislative district straddling the King Pierce County line. The seat is open because of the death last year of incumbent Democrat Roger Freeman. A fellow Democrat, Carol Gregory, was appointed to the seat and is now running to keep it. But Gregory faces a tough challenge from Republican Terry Hickle. The race has drawn hundreds of thousands of dollars in campaign cash on both sides, mostly from labor and business interests. So what's at stake? Washington House Democrats have been losing seats steadily in recent years and currently hold just a two-seat majority. Losing this race would bring them to the brink of losing control. Meanwhile, Republicans see this election as a pivotal opportunity to pick up a seat as they endeavor to gain the majority, something they haven't held since 1998. I'm Austin Jenkins in Olympia.
An Oregon pilot program that was launched in July to experiment with charging Oregon drivers based on the amount they drive has just 900 participants. Most of those participants are located in the Portland metropolitan area. Officials had hoped to enroll about 5,000 drivers in the first-of-its-kind pay-by-the-mile program. Participants would sign up with one of three private vendors, then install an electronic device that tracks mileage, pays the vendor a mileage fee of 1.5 cents per mile driven, then drivers are reimbursed for any tax they pay while in the program. The task force overseeing the program would like to attract more drivers so they can have more data on how the program is working. The Oregon Department of Transportation asked the task force this week about strategies to sign up more people. Recently, the Driver and Motor Vehicle Services Division is helping by providing information about programs to people who are renewing their licenses and registration. Oregon is facing a long-term transportation funding dilemma since gas taxes currently provide just half the money the state needs for bridge, highway, and other transportation projects. Oregonians have been purchasing more fuel-efficient vehicles, and state officials are expecting gas tax revenues to decline in the future. As gas tax revenues plummet, the cost of construction increases dramatically. This new tax-by-the-mile pilot program was authorized in a 2013 law, Senate Bill 810. The hope is that the project will continue with volunteers signing up and collecting data, with the idea that it could become mandatory in the future. Critics of the pilot program said it benefits drivers of low MPG vehicles that produce more pollution and penalizes drivers of more fuel-efficient vehicles. Lawmakers, including State Senator Betsy Johnson, have raised concerns about the cost of implementation and other aspects of the program. And if you're a driver in Washington State and a user of marijuana, the State Patrol has a warning for you. It's now illegal to have an open container in the passenger compartments of vehicles. Austin Jenkins tells us what open container means.
This new pot in cars law is modeled on Washington's longstanding open container law for alcohol. Just like you can't drive down the road with an open beer, no longer can you legally drive with an open container of marijuana or marijuana-infused product. Trooper Mark Hodgen says even a closed Ziploc bag is a violation.
If you can open that bag and get into it and then reseal it, that's not going to meet the requirement.
The requirement is that marijuana products go in the trunk or the back of the vehicle where they're not accessible. The glove box doesn't count. It is okay to have marijuana or marijuana products in the passenger compartment if they're in their original package and the seal has not yet been broken. Troopers say for now they're mainly trying to get the word out, but an open container violation can bring a $136 ticket. I'm Austin Jenkins in Olympia.
Shell Oil announced September 28th it would cease further exploration in the Chukchi and Beaufort Seas after spending upwards of $7 billion on Arctic offshore exploration. The company cited disappointing results from exploratory wells drilled in the Chukchi and the unpredictable federal regulatory environment. Shell experienced transit problems with vessels the last time it drilled off Alaska in 2012. The Kulik broke loose from its tow vessel in Gale Forks winds and ran aground near Kodiak Island, and the Noble Discoverer was fined $12.2 million for violating pollution and safety laws. The two rigs pulled into Unalaska's Dutch Harbor last Sunday, more than 1,000 miles south of the company's drilling site in the Chukchi. They're now headed for Washington State. John Ryan reports.
The rigs started on their way south after Shell abandoned its 8-year, $8 billion quest for oil in the Arctic Ocean last month. Shell spokesperson Megan Baldino says the rigs are refueling and making crew changes during brief stops in Dutch Harbor. Before this summer's unsuccessful drilling season, Shell contracted with Seattle's Foss Maritime to store its rigs at the Port of Seattle in the off-season. That plan met resistance from kayaktivists on the water and lawyers in the courts. The remaining legal hurdles to berthing the rigs in Seattle evaporated in recent weeks. On Monday, a King County judge ruled against environmental groups in their lawsuit against the Port of Seattle. They opposed the drilling because of the twin risks of spilling oil and fueling runaway global climate change. Megan Baldino with Shell says the rig's final destinations are still being determined, but they will not be returning to Seattle. The Noble Discoverer is headed to Everett. Baldino says two tugboats will bring the Polar Pioneer to Port Angeles. When a single tug towed Shell's Kulik oil rig from Dutch Harbor to Everett in 2012, the rig broke free. It ran aground during a winter storm in the Gulf of Alaska. The Kulik wound up in a scrapyard in Asia. Baldino says Shell has incorporated many, many lessons from its 2012 program. She says safety is Shell's first priority. I'm John Ryan in Unalaska, Alaska.
Oregon wildlife officials are trying to remove goldfish and other invasive fish that have been introduced to ponds in the Umtila National Forest. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife treated two ponds Wednesday to remove schools of goldfish and bullhead catfish that have been illegally introduced to the water. Crews put a plant-based poison into the pond that kills all fish in the water, including uncaught trout. Wildlife officials stock the ponds with rainbow trout for anglers. Wildlife officials say the goldfish and catfish increased competition for food and space, stunting the fishery. By poisoning the ponds, they must restart the fisheries. 9 other ponds across northeast Oregon will also be treated. The ponds will be restocked and ready to fish by spring. Facing pressure from federal regulators, Washington Governor Jay Inslee has directed state officials to take another stab at updating clean water rules, tied partly to how much fish people eat. Washington's current standards are out of compliance with the Federal Clean Water Act, so last month the Environmental Protection Agency put forward draft rules that will become final in less than a year unless the state comes up with their own. Inslee says the state needs to take charge of its own destiny with rules that would be more manageable but still meet EPA approval.
Because frankly, the federal rule does not provide flexibility. The federal rule would require things that, frankly, I don't think are achievable by our businesses today. The science does not exist to remove some of these chemicals from some of this water.
He says the state's new rule will include a fish consumption rate equal to Oregon's of 175 grams per person per day and a cancer risk rate of 1 in a million. Those are the same rates put forward in the federal rule, but it would have more flexible timelines on implementation and might exempt legacy pollutants such as PCBs and mercury from discharge permits. Some environmentalists say giving big polluters more than a decade to comply would be too lenient and would not lead to effective cleanup of the state's waterways. Coming up in the second half of the bridge, the Great Oregon Shakeout. This morning at 10:15, we'll be ducking, covering, and holding on. Station manager Joanne Rideout has a special report and will be joining us live in the studio for the drill. And you're listening to The Bridge here on the stations of Coast Community Radio. Taking a look at the forecast for the Lower Columbia Coastal Region, today we can expect mostly sunny skies with temperatures 70 to 75 degrees. Winds are from the northeast, 5 to 10 miles per hour, gusting to 20 miles per hour this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy skies with patchy fog after midnight. Lows are in the lower 50s, and the winds have diminished. Friday, partly sunny skies after patchy morning fog, high 65 to 70 degrees. And Friday night, cloudy with a slight chance of rain in the evening. Similar forecast for Saturday, with clouds and rain likely in the morning and again in the evening, but partly sunny skies are expected on Sunday, with high 60 to 65 degrees. And we have a special message from meteorologist Gordon McCraw. Gordon says, often the first response to an emergency or disaster does not come from the police or fire department. It comes from citizens willing to come to the aid of someone in distress, ordinary citizens behaving extraordinarily during a crisis. Learning basic first aid, CPR, taking FEMA's online incident command courses can help you be better prepared to render aid during emergencies. Knowing what to do during an emergency can greatly reduce your anxiety and the anxiety of whomever you are helping. Establishing a community emergency response team or other citizen response teams in your community is also a great way to provide a higher level of emergency training to better prepare your community to assist those in need during an emergency or disaster. Developing skills to assist a neighbor, friend, or even a stranger during an emergency is a great way to help become prepared, not scared. And speaking of prepared, not scared, Tillamook area residents will hear from various agencies this evening from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Neocony High School gym. Learn how to prepare for the potential natural disasters that affect our region, such as earthquakes, tsunamis, flood, and windstorms. Among those answering questions and giving information will be the Rockaway Beach and Garibaldi Police Departments, Tillamook Sheriff's Office, CERT, and the American Heart Association. You're listening to The Bridge on Coast Community Radio. It's a sound we never hope to hear. The earth rolls and buckles. Our homes and offices seem determined to hurt us as books fall off shelves and pictures tumble from the walls. After long moments, it feels over. Now what? Oregon Governor Kate Brown has proclaimed today, October 15th, Great Oregon Shakeout Day. More than 500,000 Oregonians will join millions across the nation to drop, cover, and hold on. The shakeout drill is scheduled for 10:15 a.m. this morning. This means that wherever you are at that moment, at home, at work, at school, anywhere, you should drop, cover, and hold on as if there were a major earthquake occurring at that very moment, and stay in that position for at least 60 seconds. There will not be any freeway closures, power outages, or other simulated effects of the hypothetical earthquake. Businesses, organizations, schools, and government agencies can register and have their employees drop, cover, and hold, or have more extensive emergency drills. The main goal of the shakeout is to get Oregonians prepared for major earthquakes, to learn what to do before, during, and after. An important part of the mission here at Coast Community Radio is to be prepared and help prepare our community in case of emergency.
I'm Coast Community Radio General Manager Joanne Rideout, here to talk with you about the Great Shakeout. This week around the nation, people are taking part in an earthquake preparedness drill called the Great Shakeout. We're hoping you'll participate with us at Coast Community Radio when, along with other media outlets, we send out over the air the sounds of what it might sound like if a major earthquake hits somewhere near you. Here on the Northwest Oregon and Southwest Washington coast, where our radio station broadcasts locally, we are smack dab in the middle of one of the highest risk areas in the world for catastrophic earthquake activity. The purpose of this drill is not to scare you. Lord knows there'll be plenty of that when the time comes. What we want is to make you think, now, before it happens, about what you would do wherever you are if a major catastrophe like this occurred. If, like most people, you're not prepared for this type of thing, we're hoping we can make you think about that too, about food, water, warm clothing, and shelter, something that would last long enough, experts say about 2 weeks, until some kind of help could arrive. While it may seem like a distant possibility in the scheme of our everyday lives, we all know that life can change in a heartbeat, and things as you know them are never quite the same again. Statistics say most people are not killed by the earthquake itself. They're killed by falling walls, debris, and other heavy objects. That's why part of this drill includes the advice, drop, cover, and hold. This short slogan could save your life in the initial stages of a disaster. Many people survive earthquakes only to suffer later because there were no resources available to help them. Your decision to get prepared now could make a life or death difference to your family. So join with us in the Great Shakeout. Listen, learn, and think, and then act. Take a short while to pull together what you might need, then you can forget it, and go back to pretending what we'd all like to think, that it will never happen. I'm Joanne Rideout for Coast Community Radio. Thanks for joining us in the Great Shakeout.
And that's all we have time for on this edition of The Bridge. If you missed any part of it or just want to hear it again, a podcast is available on our website at coastradio.org. We appreciate your comments and questions. Email us at news1, that's news, N-E-W-S, and the numeral 1 at KMUN.org. Put The Bridge in the subject. And don't forget, keep your radios tuned at the top of the hour for the Great Oregon Shakeout. Joanne Rideout will be in live here at the studio to take us through the drill. I'm Kate Brister. Thank you for listening. The Bridge is a production of Coast Community Radio.